Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Dan Cook, don't help her. Who is this? Who sang
38
this?
Special.
Very good.
It sounds like 38 Special.
Nicely done.
Yeah, I'm really not good with that stuff, but I know that's what our next guest is excited about, the Name That Tune segment of his interview, because that's his specialty.
Well, we can all agree on, well, most of us can agree on 38 Special. That's and it truth. Seems that Republicans and Democrats are agreeing on prison sentencing reform.
What? Bipartisan support? I never heard such a concept.
Soon cats and dogs will be getting married. I mean, what's going on here?
It's absolutely insane. In fact, John Gordon is the executive director of the ACLU Minnesota. He's in studio with us to talk about this new package, what it means for prison reform, what it means for prisoners, what it means for prisoners' rights here in Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting
Good
me.
To have you here, John. Was this a surprise for you?
The idea of sentencing reform and prison reform has been around for some time. It's an idea that's gotten a lot of bipartisan support. So that it's in the news is not a huge surprise.
But they finally got around to doing it. And I just want to give folks a little bit of background about what is in the package. There was a House bill that focused on reducing prisoner recidivism, them coming back into the system again, that did not include some controversial sentencing charges. There's a new Senate package that's likely to pass that includes lowering the mandatory minimum sentences for drug felonies, including reducing the three-strike penalty, because after three strikes, you're supposed to spend your life behind bars. Now they're going to reduce that to 25 years, three strikes. The provision would not be allowed to take place retroactively, by the way, and I guess the Democrats didn't really like that. They were hoping to maybe spring some former offenders, but this is only happening for prisoners or offenders that go forward. Let's see. It also reduces disparity in sentencing guidelines between crack and powder cocaine offenses. And it basically it changes how what the sentences are when a firearm is used during a violent crime or drug offense. It also gives judges a lot more latitude in sentencing than just this is what you have to sentence for this offense.
John, were there any surprises in this bill?
And what you're looking at is a draft of something that's been floating around. The president says he's in favor of this. The fact is that we don't know exactly what it is that's going to get introduced.
Okay.
And so it's a little bit hard to speculate about that.
So we're trying to hit a moving target.
Exactly.
Let's talk about prison reform or sentencing reform. What are some of the injustices and the inadequacies that you have been experiencing with prisoners being sentenced to what you think, I guess, are egregious sentences?
Sentencing is a big part of the problem. The problems really start on the street. They start with our police practices. They start with our bail practices. They go on with how people are treated at all levels of the criminal justice system. So sentencing is certainly part of it, and it's something that we've been focused on at the ACLU for some time.
Well, what are the ACLU measures that you would like to see put in place?
What we have is a national campaign in all 50 states called Smart Justice. The goal of the Smart Justice campaign is to reduce the prison population in this entire country by 50%. This country has got 5% of the world's population, the United States 5%, and 25% of all the prisoners in the world are in this country. That is a shocking statistic. We are shocked by it, and that needs to be addressed at every stage of the system. We paid a lot of attention during the election campaign that just ended to prosecutorial reform and the huge role that prosecutors play when they decide what they're going to charge people with and how long a sentence that they're going to seek.
But people who do bad stuff have to go to prison.
That is absolutely true. But there are plenty of people getting sent to prison for minor drug offenses and other minor offenses, nonviolent offenses. And the sentences that they are subjected to are overly long in all parts of this country, including Minnesota. There is also enormous racial bias in this system. In Minnesota, a black an individual is 11 times more likely to get sent to jail than a white person. That is double the national average and puts us in nasty company. We are the third worst state in the union in terms of black-white sentencing disparities.
Hold on. I just want that. I know, Paul, you have a question. We are 11 times more likely to send a black person than a white person to jail, and that is double what the national rate is here in Minnesota?
More than double.
Wow.
We're number three. Who's the worst?
New Jersey and Iowa are number one and two.
Really?
Really.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the prison system of this country has become big business. Right?
Huge business. Mm-hmm. Private industry is incarcerating enormous numbers of people in this country, both in terms of immigration incarceration, which we're reading about, families separated at the border, and internal incarceration, and that is in state and federal prisons all over this country. A lot of them, you think, these are run by the government. In fact, they are run by private contractors who are making big, big profits.
So they have incentive for more guests.
They do, and they have a very strong lobbying presence in Washington.
Let's say the Senate bill, as it stands, goes forward and gets passed and becomes legislation. How would this play out for current prisoners in Minnesota and those possibly going through the system right now or those who offend in the future?
Well, again, what this bill is going to look like when it ultimately gets introduced is pretty hard to say.
Sure.
But what is concerning is getting at these disparities in terms of, for example, minor drug offenses, which should not be sending people to jail.
What about marijuana? One of our listeners asked specifically about weed. Yeah. I mean, will this relax some of the sentencing guidelines?
We're going to have to wait and see what gets introduced. We know that a majority of people in this country believe that marijuana should not be criminalized at all. And yet we've got millions of people in jail for those related drug offenses. And it's not right. And it's not really what people want. If they knew how to speak up, and they did in several elections that in this election season just ended.
What's the ACLU stance on felons voting? We know during the midterms of last Tuesday, I guess it was already, Florida restored voting rights for people previously committed felonies. It was Florida's Fourth Amendment restored voting rights for people in the state convicted of felonies as long as they have completed their sentences. Although anyone convicted of murder or felony sex offenses, would be excluded.
We are really celebrating what happened in Florida. The ACLU and the ACLU of Florida were strongly behind that initiative. Not being able to vote is one of the collateral consequences of having been in jail for a felony. What Florida did was basically, bring its law more in line with what the law is in Minnesota, which is that if you have completed your sentence, including any supervised release after you get out of prison, then you can vote. There are plenty of states where you can vote once you're out of prison, even if you're on parole. Okay, so your voting rights are restored when you walk out through the doors of the jail. There are two states in this country where you can vote every day of your life, that is in jail, out
really?
Of jail, anywhere. And that's Vermont and Maine. As far as I know, those governments have not collapsed under the weight of all this voting. And it shows that basically if you are a member of this society, you ought to be able to vote for elected officials.
Talk to me. You said in Minnesota, if you've served your debt, even if you've committed a felony, what about murder or a sex crime? Can you still vote after you've served your time?
If you've served your time in Minnesota and you are, as they say, off paper, that is, you've completed your sentence, then you can vote. The problem is that that is confusing to a lot of folks. A lot of people literally don't know always whether they are on paper or off paper. People make mistakes. They get accused of voting illegally and they get into trouble, or they get, frankly, used to not voting. And then even after they're able to, they don't start up again. So it's,
what does on paper mean, though?
On paper meaning that you're still on supervised release, parole or probation.
And you're not supposed to vote when you're on supervised release.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
John, how do we balance public safety? People want to be safe. How do we balance the need for public safety with trying to drop recidivism rates and focus our energies on best practices and rehabilitation and making these men and women, you know, contributing members of society again? How do you achieve the right balance there?
Let me offer what a friend of mine calls a blinding flash of the obvious, and that is that we're all interested in being safe. We want to be safe. We want our families to be safe. I want my children to be safe, my grandchildren. Everybody is interested in that. Their long prison sentences do not make us safer. In fact, the longer people stay in prison, the more difficult it is for them to reenter society. People have been in prison, it is more difficult for them to get jobs. It is more difficult for them to find housing. It is more difficult for them to reintegrate themselves into society. And therefore, there are way more pressures on those folks than there should be. And so, in fact, we know that nearly everybody who is in prison will get out at some point. There are some people who are there for life, but most people will get out. But we don't think about what's going to happen to them, and we don't think about how to integrate them into society so that they can become productive members of society and pick up their lives again. We sort of pretend like that's never going to happen, and it does. And as a result, people are under enormous family pressures. Families have been split up. There's over a million kids in this country who are going to grow up with parents in jail, over a million. And what that does to families in terms of tearing them apart is just vicious. And the longer somebody is in jail, the more the harm occurs.
Let's take some calls. We want to hear what you think about this new plan to lower prison terms. Again, it's just a proposed legislation at this time. Nothing has been passed. Our phone number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. Are you in favor of this new bipartisan plan that focuses on reducing prisoner sentence times and recidivism? And then we'll also talk about solutions. What are the solutions the ACLU sees to reintegrate prisoners into society and how to cut down on some of that long time and their reentry process? It's 523, 651-989-9226. Paul and I will return in a moment.
Jordana and Paul, along with John Gordon, he is executive director at the ACLU of Minnesota. We're talking about prison sentencing reform, and there seems to be true and rare bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. We all know we have to do something. We want to hear from you. Mary in Eden Prairie, thank you for tuning in. Do you have a question?
Pardon me?
Do you have a question?
No, not a question. I just have a comment.
Okay.
I am a 70-year-old mother of a son who is 40 and in the federal system for marijuana, 10-year mandatory sentence. He did get in trouble three times for marijuana, no guns, no gang affiliation, and so has now been in the system for 4 years and, you know, has served 4 years of a 10-year sentence.
So just possessing it, or did he have enough to sell?
He had enough to sell. I mean,
okay.
He had a warehouse where he worked out of legitimately, mm-hmm. and he was storing some of it there for someone to pick up the next day. And he did do this a few times, and so he had had two much less marijuana
charges,
offenses, yeah, mm-hmm. charges before that. But it's the three, you know, like they talked about earlier, the three strikes and you're out.
So, are you in favor then of this legislation? I mean, again,
of course, yeah. Yes.
And do you think it'll be easy for him to reintegrate into society once he's out?
Well, in our case, I believe that. I mean, he grew up in a very middle class white family, third child in Eden Prairie. He's smart. He's learned his lesson. I really think he'll be fine. He's going to end up, you know, being fine.
Good.
Really well.
And Mary, we hope so.
Yeah,
you're a great mom, Mary.
We wish both of you
Thank
the
you.
Best of luck.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks
John?
For letting me.
Oh, sorry, Mary.
Way to cut her off.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mary. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm glad you got it.
You do that to me a lot. Just hang up.
I've heard enough, Paul.
You're
Bye.
Not as interesting as Mary.
I know that. John, do we have any idea? And I know it's pending. We don't have the final bill yet. But would this be retroactive for people that are serving time? With the three strikes, you're out?
We don't know what this is going to look like, actually. But Mary's story is a great example of the harshness of this and the importance of connections with people who are incarcerated. So it is enormously important that people's families stay in touch with them. There are a lot of people who do wonderful work by visiting prisons and staying in touch with people. Some of this is not religious. But it all helps people overcome this, state the obvious, enormously isolating and difficult experience.
Mike's in Minneapolis. Mike, chime on in here, sir. Think it's a good idea?
Hey, Mike.
I do think that the sentence reforms are probably a good idea. I'd like to see it go a little further, though. I'd like to see some reforms in the... societally, if you understand my meaning. It's as the gentleman from
the ACLU
there opined. It is difficult for a fellow to get. I mean, speaking as somebody that's been in prison, it's extremely difficult to reintegrate into society. I think the prior caller, her son, may have a harder time than she thinks, even though he wants to. Change. First of all, he's got to want to change, right? Just like with drug abuse, it's difficult. It's harder to find a job. It's harder to get a place. I've been out for 20 years, and it's going to be extremely difficult for me to find any place. There are places that I can't live now because I've been in prison.
Working, Mike? How did that? Did you
I
have
am.
Any?
I'm
help?
Working. I've had a job virtually since the day I got out.
Good for you.
So getting a job wasn't a problem for me. The type of job I could get and the kind of pay that I could get was a problem.
Really?
There are some jobs that I'll never be able to have, because I have that behind me. I wind up with lower paying jobs. Housing is a problem. As I said, here 20 years later, there are still places that will not take me because I have that on my record.
What were you in for, Mike?
Nonviolent offenses, theft crimes, forgery, fraud, things like that.
If you had said sex crimes, I might have thought differently about this, but these just seem to be petty crimes. But how long did you serve, Mike?
I was a bad guy for a long time.
Oh, no, I mean, how long were you in prison, sir?
Yeah, I get that. All told, I would guess about a dozen years.
Okay. Well, listen, you sound like you're a good guy. Oh, do you have a question? Do you want to talk to Mike?
Mike brings up a really good issue about housing. We actually have sued the city of Faribault, which has been encouraging landlords to look into people's past criminal histories and take that into consideration when they're renting to them. And it just makes it that much more difficult for people like Mike to integrate into society.
And it's not just the cities that are doing it. It's the property managers themselves or even the insurance companies that are going to after the property manager saying, look, we're going to jack up your rates if you got felons living there. You know, things like this. There needs to be some reform in it all.
The one other thing that Mike brings up that I think is great is the notion that we as a society, and this country in particular, seems to divide the human race into quote-unquote criminals and quote-unquote not criminals. If you think about it, everybody has committed some kind of criminal offense from time to time. Most people don't get caught. Most of the time, people don't get hurt. But that doesn't mean that a crime hasn't been committed. I'm going to plug a book that I have nothing to do with by Emily Baxter, who was in Hennepin County a public defender at one point, called We Are All Criminals. That's the title of the book, and that is the subject of the book. And she discusses in words and beautiful photographs what has the inequalities and the unfairness and the disparities between the way some people get treated more or less randomly by the system and some people, it's just something happens and they just go on with their lives and it's all just fine.
John, hold it there. We're speaking with John Gordon, who's the executive director of the ACLU. Mike, I'm putting you on hold. Randall, I see your call. Mike, as somebody who believes in second chances, I wish you only the best from now on.
And good luck, Mike.
Productive future. Randall, we see your call. Our phone number is 651-989-9226. This bill is called First Step. Is it a great first step? Is it not a great first step? What else would you like to see? 651-989-9226 on CCO.
Paul and Jordana asking a rhetorical question. Does the current criminal justice system perpetuate criminality?
This is a fascinating conversation that we're having. Your texts are fascinating. We're doing this, of course, because of this new bill called the First Step Act that has bipartisan support that basically reduces sentences for drug offenses and makes it easier to and is supposed to reduce recidivism, make it easier to get back into society.
The three-strike penalty would go from life behind bars to 25 years. That would not be retroactive. Apparently, that was a major concession from Democrats. Joining us is John Gordon. He is the executive director at the ACLU of Minnesota. I just have to read this one text, John, because we're seeing a lot of these kinds of comments. If a guy relieves me of my Rolex with a 9mm, I'm not crying tears because he can't rent an apartment or can't vote. I want my watch back. So again, it's almost like fighting gravity, I think, because it's easy to give in to our fears. But how is prison reform going to help the general population as well?
The question to ask is, how is our current system solving our problem? And the answer is, it's not. We've got 2.3 million people in jails and prisons in this country, 2.3 million. And we've got another 7 million on correctional supervision. One in three black men in our society are going to spend time in prison. One in three.
Wow.
What we are doing now is not working. Once insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So I think it's not too harsh to say this is insane.
So the question we were asking, of course, is do you support this first step? Is it far enough? What else would you like to see? Randall's in Roseville, and he's been waiting to join the conversation. Randall, thanks for the call.
Thank you for having me on your radio station.
You bet. What do you think? Is this a good next step, Randall? Tell us a little bit about why you gave us a call today.
I personally think it's a step that maybe should have been taken a long time ago, but I think most people don't think of it that way. I'm a convicted felon. It's been well over 20 years. It was for a burglary charge, actually. Never spent time in prison, but I did spend time in jail. And I pay for it every day for the rest of my life.
How so?
Work, relationships. This could be relationships with a friend. Just recently, probably a couple months ago, we were having a conversation about people going to jail and prison and that they shouldn't be able to vote and different things like that. And I mean, I basically came out, told them I was a convicted felon, and it's been a part of my life forever now. And yes, I pay for it every day because I know it happened when I was in my teens, late teens, 18. And I couldn't join the military. I can't get a job that I respect. A lot of people respect me in my job. I actually have a position that most people wouldn't even think that I would have. I care for the elderly. Mm-hmm. Most people wouldn't think that. Mm-hmm. My conviction's been so long, though, that, you know, I mean, it was something I messed up when I was very young, and I changed.
Randall, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people on the text line that say, well, then you shouldn't commit the crime. Well, I don't feel bad for you. Well, you should have known better. What is your message? I'm sensing a lot of that you feel bad, that you are reformed. What is your message to those folks?
I agree. I shouldn't have committed the crime. But as an 18-year-old who gets in trouble with somebody else, and that person actually ended up passing away while I was in jail, I mean, it all falls on me, and I deal with it. It is part of my life. You are correct. I shouldn't have committed the crime. It is true. I wish I wouldn't have committed the crime. I teach my son now not to commit any crimes. The biggest thing that he's taught, don't lie. You know, don't try to deceive. Don't try to hide anything. Whatever the truth is, the truth. Just say it. It's something that's going to always affect me and will never change. I don't think people see it to my perspective. Mm-hmm. They don't see the hurt, the feelings. I guarantee you once some people heard that I was a felon, they changed their views about me. So
it's almost like a sentence that never ends.
You're constantly being punished. Yeah, totally.
Do people deserve a second chance?
Randall, thank you.
The answer, I think most people would say, yeah, most people screw up and people should have a chance to make it right.
Well, because they paid their debt, too. I mean, it's not you screwed up and you get off. You screwed up, you go right to jail, and then you have to move on. Randall, and thanks for the call and thanks for sharing your story. Hopefully you opened a lot of eyes. Let's try to get this last call in. Richard's in Princeton. Richard, what do you want to say here, sir?
I think the people I need to understand, I volunteer at a local county jail. There's a group of us going every Friday, and we volunteer. We spend 2 hours every day in there, every Friday. And mostly people in there, they're good people. They make mistakes, continuously keep making mistakes, a lot of drug and alcohol. And the unfortunate thing is when you get into this system and you start working with these people, and you just realize that we're so lucky, the people on the outside, that we don't have any problems. I mean, people complain about jobs, everything else. We don't have any problems with what they have because, I said, when they get out, they have so many things against them. I mean, getting the point that you've been, if you're dealing with drugs and stuff and you get out and you go back to the same families, especially the ones that come off some of the reservations up north, and people we work with tell me straight out, there's nothing good up there because the drugs and the alcohol and the violence is so much. And there's really no place for the probation and stuff to get away from this. They need to get completely out of the community. They need to start over. And that's what I tell them. You need to start your life over. And I said, we always try to tell them, it's kind of a Christian group. We work together. And we said that if you don't have Jesus Christ for support behind you, you really don't have a whole lot to rely on when things get tough. And
Richard, we want to thank you for the call. And I'm sorry, but we're up against a clock here. And we thank you for your service and for your volunteerism and for your message, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Point, that foundation of faith, you know, how do mm-hmm. people get better, turn the corner? Increase their odds of success. No, I appreciate that call. Thank you, Richard.
And forgiveness goes a long way, too.
Absolutely. Forgiveness.
We want to thank our guest. John, thank you so much for calling in. This was a great conversation. John Gordon is the executive director of the ACLU. Thanks for your insight, sir.
Your pleasure. Richard. Thanks for the invitation. Lovely to be here.
Appreciate your perspective, sir. Thanks. Thank you. It is now 5:49 Wicks and Jewelers time. Recognized as one of America's premier jewelry stores, Wicks and Jewelers is your destination for the service and selection you won't find anywhere else.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.